Peter Larson is a professional paleontologist. He and his team at the Black Hills Institute uncovered Sue, the world's largest and most complete Tyrannosaurus Rex skeleton in the Hell Creek Badlands of South Dakota in August of 1990. And it was actually an amateur paleontologist named Susan Hendrickson who discovered the first bone fragments. Peter Larson is the co-author of a book called Rex Appeal, The Amazing Story of Sue, the Dinosaur That Changed Science, the Law, and My Life. Larson told Steve Paulson about August 12th, 1990, the day he first saw Sue.
Well, the first thing I saw was Susan Hendrickson came walking up, and she had two pieces of bone in her hand, and they looked like chunks of honeycomb. And I picked one up, and I looked at it, and it just clicked that this was none other than Tyrannosaurus rex bones. They came from a vertebra, and T. rex bones have a texture like bird bones because, of course, they're very closely related. They had a one-way breathing system just like birds of today. And so, needless to say, I got very, very excited and ran over to the site with her and saw these just fragments of bones dripping out of the hill and cross-section about 8 feet across, about 7 foot up in elevation on the side of the cliff of these wonderful bones coming out of the hillside.
Now, you saw 8 feet of bones or so, but that's still far from a complete T-Rex skeleton. But somehow you had a feeling that it was all there under the ground.
Well, I guess one learns to trust one's senses and one's just feelings, if you will. Been collecting fossils for a long time, since I was four, and that's 46 years ago. So you get kind of a feeling for things. I don't know if it's what you're observing so much as that feeling inside, but I'm sure all of that kind of puts itself together. And I just knew at that moment that this was going to be the most important fossil that I'd ever dug on.
You knew that? Just the moment that you laid eyes on this, even before you started digging, you knew this was going to be a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
I just, you know, had that just plain certainty about it. I knew that the skull was going to be there. I knew it was going to be a complete or relatively complete skeleton. Of course, by looking at the bones on the surface, I knew the preservation was just marvelous.
Now, of course, discovery is one thing, but actually getting the bones out of the ground without everything crumbling into dust is quite a trick, I would think. How did you do this?
Well, it's a very complex and rather tedious thing. Of course, you have to dig down. We had permission to, you know, use hand tools, but not to use anything, any mechanical tools. So we went up about 25 feet above the specimen on the cliff face, and I was figuring approximate dimensions of what the fossil would be like, and we started cutting down. By the time we got above the fossil surface itself, we were 25 feet into the wall, almost 30 feet down and 30 feet laterally as well. And because it was going to be such a large excavation, I wanted to get all that overburden off at first, because if you leave bones exposed on the bottom and then you have to go back up again and dig, you can have real problems. But it took us almost 3 weeks to get the bones out of the ground. But that's just the beginning. It's about 25,000 hours of work to prepare a T-Rex skeleton. It's just almost an unbelievable amount of labor that has to go into it.
Why does it take so long to do that?
Well, you can't do these things very quickly. Of course, it's been laying around for 65 million years. It's had literally several thousand feet of sediment above it at one time. That crushes the bones. The bones are still in place, but they're broken into little tiny fragments. And so we have to apply a lot of glue as we collect and a lot of glue as we are removing that matrix. And there's minerals that have sort of attached themselves to the bones over time as the groundwater percolating through the sediments. And so we have to very carefully remove those. You can do it quickly, but you destroy that surface detail. It is so important in looking at the muscle attachments and trying to develop soft tissue anatomy and physiology and trying to see what was going on with those bones and looking for things like pathologies, which tell us basically little snapshots in the life of that animal and tell us about disease and injury and what happened after as a result of that.
You said that you were applying glue as you were extracting the bones. What were you gluing anything onto?
Well, we're actually gluing the fragments of bones together again because, again, the sediment has crushed them into little tiny fragments. They're still in place, still where they belong, but there's a little tiny hairline fractures that you can't always even see as you're digging. So as you uncover each square inch of that bone, we put on mostly cyanoacrylate, super glues basically, and another thing called polyvinyl acetate, which is another plastic that helps to make sure that we get glue in every fracture to hold that specimen together.
Now, you named the skeleton Sue, and obviously you think it was female. What made you determine the gender?
Well, the name came about, of course, in honor of Susan Hendrickson, that wonderful amateur paleontologist who was volunteering her time with us and who brought those first fragments of bones for us to look at. But then as we were excavating her, we got joking, well, you know, is this really a girl dinosaur? Is it, or is it a boy named Sue, like the Johnny Cash song? That got me thinking, well, you know, have we ever looked at, is there a way to actually determine the sex of a dinosaur? And it turns out that through about 10 years of research that I think that there are some really, really good ways that help us determine at least the sex of these meat-eating dinosaurs called theropods. And it turns out that Sue really is a female. And there are two morphotypes, or two types of skeletons, a more robust form like Sue and a more gracile, a more lightly built form like that second T-Rex that we excavated called Stan after Stan Sakrison. And the big, mean, nasty ones were female.
How big do you figure Sue was when she was roaming the earth?
Sue was approximately 40 feet in length, about maybe as much as 41 feet in length when you add up the total tail vertebrae. And she could look through a second floor window without any problems at all.
Would she have looked like one of those dinosaurs in Jurassic Park?
She very much would resemble that T-Rex that we saw in the Jurassic Park movies. In fact, some of the original measurements of Sue were used in creation of that beast in that first Jurassic Park movie, that first T-Rex.
Do you have any clues as to what killed Sue?
We have actually some pretty good evidence. When we look at her skeleton, we look at the way she was found, the bone behind her left eye has been torn away and broken and sort of laying almost dangling, if you think of it in that way. The bone behind that, the squamosal, has actually punctures in that bone, not healed punctures. This is something that happened either as she died, when she died, or after death. But even more telling is the back of that left lower jaw has been pulled out of its socket, pulled to the side, where the front is still in line underneath the front of the jaw. So I think literally she had the left side of her face torn off by the bite of another T-Rex.
Wow. What makes you think it was another T-Rex?
Well, it's the only animal big enough to do that, and the puncture wounds match with T-Rex teeth.
So there's real drama that you can read into these ancient bones.
I think that's one of the most exciting thing about to me anyway, of what I do is I get sort of little images that these create little, almost little movies in my mind, which maybe I'm a little nuts, but it really spurs my imagination to think, what does this mean? What is this? Here's this broken bone in the leg. You know, she had a broken fibula. What does that mean? What could that possibly mean to a bipedal animal like myself? In fact, I did a little test. It was rather inadvertent, but I broke my leg, and I found out that you cannot move your muscles when you have a broken bone in a limb. You can move them maybe very, very slightly, but you have no control over them and absolutely no strength. This animal was helpless, and that bone healed. The only way she survived that broken leg was the same way that I survived my broken leg. She was cared for by her mate that brought her food while she convalesced.
So you actually know that T-Rexes had mates and they lived together and they looked out for one another?
Well, I think that things like that broken leg point to that. Now, I guess the fun thing about paleontology is some of the questions and some of the answers are always going to be a little bit fuzzy because, you know, we can't bring them back to life. But I think there's enough evidence there to support a hypothesis that shows that. I think family life was a very important thing in the lives of these theropods, these meat-eating dinosaurs, because we know that with Sue, we found parts of a smaller male, a juvenile T-Rex whose skull was only about 18 inches long. Remember, Sue's skull is 5 feet long, and a baby T-Rex whose skull was only about 10 inches long. And that's not the only instance where we have multiple burials of T-Rex. There was also specimens exhumed by the Los Angeles County Museum in the 60s where there were two individuals buried together. And now in Montana, a place that Keith Rigby is working over by Fort Peck, Montana, they have found multiple individuals, at least two and maybe three or more individuals in that same site again. So here we have repeated instances where you have more than one individual buried at once. I think that's really convincing argument for some sort of a family life or some sort of an interaction, a gregarious activity by these animals.
You and your team at the Black Hills Institute have uncovered 7 T-Rexes, which is just an amazing number. How do you account for your success?
Amateur paleontologists, they're the ones who call us up and say, come out and look at what we found. And I think I might have a T-Rex. Or this is a, I think I got a Triceratops skeleton coming out of the ground because I can see a horn. And we go out and go to those people and see what they've got and help them. Or, you know, when they realize in the case of a big fossil, it's just way beyond their capabilities, then we're able to work with them, or because of them, we're able to excavate skeletons. And, you know, to communicate with people and to keep all those channels open and to give people credit when they make a discovery like this wonderful discovery Susan Hendrickson made and the one that Stan Sakrison made with the second most complete T-Rex. That, in the end, is what I guess people who love fossils are the happiest with, and that's some recognition for the contributions that they've made to the science.
Peter Larson is the co-author of Rex Appeal, The Amazing Story of Sue, the Dinosaur That Changed Science, the Law, and My Life. He spoke with Steve Paulson.